Okay, this evening we are continuing the series that we started last week, and we're calling this series Adulting because we are looking at a number of very practical topics that adults deal with, and young adults might need a little bit more coaching than, you know, real adults or old adults. So that's what we're going to try to do here. We're going to look to see what the Bible has to say about some of the things that are really practical, big things that we deal with as young adults. So tonight we're starting what's sort of a little mini-series on work, thinking about how do we approach work as a Christian? How do we approach work, our jobs, as a person of faith? So I'm sorry to say, contrary to popular requests, I will not be singing or dancing to Rihanna or Fifth Harmony. Had several requests as we started this work series to do that. It's not going to happen, so sorry to disappoint you. Unless I get inspired at some point. I shouldn't say it definitely won't happen, but it probably won't happen. Instead, what I want to do tonight is begin by introducing you to three people. Not three people that are actually here, but by telling you about three people. These are all people who are Christians, and they're people who want to approach their work as Christians, but they do it in some pretty different ways. So the first person is Pete Moberg. Pete was my mechanic when I lived in Illinois. And Pete was a believer, and when you walked into his shop, on the walls there was plaques of scripture verses, and that was part of how he tried to be a Christian at work, was by letting people know that he was a Christian by putting these verses around. But also, he approached his work very honestly and sincerely. So, and that's especially important as a mechanic, because everybody thinks they're getting ripped off by their mechanic. But I had an incredible amount of trust in Pete that when I brought my car into him, he would look at it, he would give me a fair assessment of the problem, and he would charge me a fair price to fix it. And not only that, but he did his job very well. So it's not just that he was honest, it's not just that he was ethical, but he was also really good at his job. And that was part of the way that he approached his work as a Christian. Person number one. Person number two is Karen McCormick. Some of you might know her. She goes here to PBC. And her husband John started the Kilgoris Project. We've talked about that. We had the Kilgoris Marketplace back in December. This is a ministry that is in Kilgoris, Kenya, and what they are doing is they are building these buildings that function as churches and schools for the people of Kilgoris and the surrounding communities. So as she approaches her work for the Kilgoris Project, as she approaches that as a Christian, she is providing space for believers to meet and to worship. She is building schools that provide jobs for some teachers, as well as an education for students. And the Kilgoris Project has also started a number of co-ops for women that teach them things about finance and business so that they can start and run their own business and provide for themselves and their kids. So for Karen, that's what it looks like to approach her work as a Christian. Very different than Pete, but still, both of them are trying very carefully to approach their work, to think carefully about what does it mean to be a Christian as I work. The third person I want to introduce you to is Steve Grosser. Steve is a part owner and CFO of a media company in Minneapolis, and he makes a pretty good living doing this for this company. With his income that he makes, that's much more than he needs to live on, he's done a number of things, he and his family. They have three biological kids, they've adopted four more, and they foster two others, and they provide a family and a home for these kids. He also has bought some property and started a halfway house, a Christian halfway house, for those who are coming out of prison or recovering from some sort of addiction as a way of helping them ease back into society under the guidance of some Christian mentors. They've also bought a farm, and they've converted this farm into a center for equestrian therapy for children with disabilities. So he's taken his money that his job has provided and done all of these things for the Lord that he wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. So these are all three very different approaches to what it means to be a Christian in our work, or to use our work for the Lord, to serve God in our work. And there's a lot others, but if we just think about these, Pete wants to do a couple things. He wants to let people know that he's a Christian and maybe get some people to ask him some questions about that by posting verses around. Mm-hmm. And he wants to do his work really hard. He wants to do his job really well, and he wants to be fair as he does it. Karen is running a ministry. She wants people to hear the gospel. Social justice is a big part of what she does too, trying to get education to women and children to help them break out of poverty and be able to have a sustainable life in their country and in their community. So she's in vocational ministry. She's the only one of these people whose job is actually a ministry. And then you have Steve, who has a job that provides him with a lot of expendable income that he then takes to be a blessing to both his family and the kids that they've adopted, as well as a bunch of other people that get to use this therapy center, as well as the halfway house. So when we ask the question, what does it mean to approach our work as a Christian? Or what does it mean to think Christianly about our work? Or what difference does our faith make in our work? There are a lot of different answers to that question. And working at a church or a Christian nonprofit are not the only two. To think that to integrate your faith with your work means that you have to do a job that is overtly Christian is to fall prey to a false dilemma of sacred and secular. That we think that church and sort of Christian work is sacred, that we come to church and we worship here, and pastors, they have these jobs in churches, and then the rest of everybody else, when we go to our jobs, that's secular. That doesn't have to do with our faith. That's something different. But what we want to do as a part of this series is to see that there's no such thing as this divide between the sacred and secular when it comes to our work. It's not that we either have a Christian job or we have a secular job. It's that whatever job we have, and even whatever we do with our time outside of our job, anything that we work at, we want to do Christianly. We want to approach those things from a Christian perspective, and we want our faith to make a difference in those things that we are giving our time and attention and energy to. So that's what we're going to try to do for about the next 5 weeks, is unpack what would it look like for us to do that? What would it look like to approach our jobs and whatever it is that we are working at, whether we get paid or not, what would it look like to approach that as a Christian? So what I want you to do is to grab one or two people around you and to discuss together for a few minutes. When you think about your job, when you think about going to work, what impact, if any, does your faith have on your work? Talk about that with one or two people around you, and we're going to come back together and we're going to look at the beginning of the Bible, Genesis, to see what it can teach us about how to approach our work as God would have us. So talk with a few people around you and we'll come back in a few minutes. Thank you. Take one or two more minutes, so if you haven't shared anything yet, you can share now. Okay, so I would love to hear from a few people. What difference does your faith make in your work? Anybody? I know y'all had great things to say.
Can you repeat the question, please? I know I'm the only one who didn't hear it.
Okay.
For my sake.
The question is, what difference does your faith make on your work?
We can pray for others.
You can pray for others?
Yes.
Great, yeah. Uh-huh. So you can pray for other people, your coworkers, or people at work?
If we met a conflict, instead of fight, we can pray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So the dynamics between coworkers is different. Instead of maybe fighting, you might try to find a peaceable solution and maybe pray. Yeah, that's great.
Because I do sound, I have to leave work early to go to rehearsal, and so because of that, my coworkers know that I serve in my church.
Okay, great. So you have a sort of built-in to your schedule a way to bring up the fact that you're involved in church that might open up conversations. That's great. Who else?
Bring you any glory.
Yeah. Yeah. So putting others above yourself in a way by doing something no one else wants to do that's not flashy. It doesn't draw attention to yourself. Yeah. It just has to be done. That's great. Grant again?
Opposite of that is you might not do something that you're asked to do because morally you think it's wrong. Or ethically you think it's wrong.
Yeah. So you might have, as a Christian, you have particular ethic that might keep you from actually doing something that your boss asks you to do. That's great. Any other thoughts?
I think relational-wise, caring other people about their life and saying hello and kisses.
Yeah, caring for other people, caring about other people, your coworkers. And even to take that a step farther, if you care for people, that's going to actually impact the way that you do your work. Because if you're making a product or if you're providing a service and you want to care about the user or the person who's going to receive that product or that service, you want to do your best at that thing out of love for that other person. That could be another reason. Any other thoughts? One more.
Speak the truth with love.
Speak the truth with love. Yeah, great. So kind of taking what we see from the Bible about how to deal with people and implementing that in our relationships at work. That's a great example of that. So when I interact with young adults in particular who are thinking or wondering about what does it mean to be a Christian at work, I think the two most common questions that I get are how can I better share my faith at work? How can I be a witness to my coworkers? And how can I maintain some kind of proper work-life balance? Those are kind of the two things that I hear the most, the two questions about faith and work, trying to sort these things out. But the interesting thing about these two questions, and a lot of the answers that we gave were along those lines, specifically along the lines of maybe evangelizing or having some reason to talk about your faith at work. These two issues, though, are really not about our work. The first issue, how do we evangelize our coworkers, is about what we do in the office, certainly, but it doesn't really have to do with our work directly. And the other question, about work-life balance, isn't really about work either. It's about what do I do when I'm not working? Or what do I do when I'm outside of the office? Well, how do I make sure I'm not working too much? But it also is not really a question directly about our work. So what we want to talk about here, what we want to think about is what difference does our faith make in actually the way that we do our work? Not just what we do while we're at our job, but the way that we do our work, whether that's our job, whether that's something else outside of what we get paid for that we are working at. How do we do that as a Christian? So for the next 4 or 5 weeks, the kind of questions we're going to be asking, the things we want to look at, is that as Christians, our faith should make a difference in the kind of work that we do, the way that we do our work, and our motivations behind our work. Those are some of the things that we want to think about. As Christians, what kind of work should we be engaged with? What should we be doing? Are there good jobs for Christians to have and jobs that aren't good for Christians to have? And then how should we do that? Would we do our jobs differently if we weren't Christians than if we were? And then what's our motivation behind our work? Why are we working? Are we working just to make money? Are we working to pay bills? Are we working to win some kind of acclaim for ourselves? Or is there some other reason that we do our work? So those are the kinds of questions that we're going to look at. Tonight what we're going to do, what I want to focus on, and I've entitled this message, I Was Made for This, Finding the Purpose in Our Work. Because our work should be something that is meaningful to us. It should be something where we find purpose in it. It should be something that fulfills us in some way. And we're going to look at why that is the case today. So another question for everybody. Have you ever done anything that felt extremely fulfilling to you? The kind of thing where you finished it and you're like, or even in process of doing it, and you were like, I was made for this. I feel so good about doing this. I feel like this is what I was created to do. Has anybody ever felt that about anything? Yeah. That's great.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's an example outside of your job, outside of maybe getting paid for something. Or is that in your job?
It's in my job.
Okay. Yeah. So it's both inside and out that you're making this sort of difference by helping kids and families, and that feels very fulfilling to you. Anybody else ever experienced something like that? maybe there hasn't been... Oh, go ahead, Sam.
So at my last job, I worked on a community plan for some of the poorest communities in Tulare County, being severely disadvantaged. And I utilized my MBA skills with like market analysis and development strategy. That was really important to me, like, to be able to utilize all my skills to like help this community that's desperately in need.
Yeah, that's great. So we are designed in such a way that when we are using our God-given skills to accomplish a God-given task, something that God has called us to do, we are designed to feel extremely fulfilled by that, to feel like our work is incredibly meaningful. And there are a lot of reasons why we don't always feel like that, because we know that we don't always feel fulfilled by our work. It's, sometimes it's hard to find the meaning in what we're doing, and there's a number of reasons that that might happen, and we're going to look at that next week. That's the effects of the fall on our work. Why is it that work is sometimes not fulfilling? But today, I want to look back to the first chapters of Genesis to learn something about work and why it is that work is actually something that is supposed to fulfill us, that we're supposed to find purpose, real significance and purpose in our work. So the first two chapters of Genesis are sort of foundational for telling us how the world is supposed to be. How was it designed to work? And the word work shows up a couple times. The first place is in Genesis 2, 2 through 3. It says, on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. So the first thing we see about work is that God works. That work is not something evil. Work is not something that comes after the fall. We don't just have jobs because we live in a fallen world and therefore we have to do work. No. God actually worked before humans ever existed. That was what God was doing in creation, was work. And Genesis 1 unpacks the ways in which God worked. And there's this pattern that unfolds in Genesis 1 that shows us sort of foundationally, fundamentally, what was God doing in his work of creation. So if in the very beginning of Genesis, 1 through 2 says, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. He's creating, he's working. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep. So God creates the heavens and the earth, and it says it's without form and it's void. Whatever that means. It's just kind of this chaotic mass or something. The way it's described in the text, it's without form and it's void. And then what the rest of chapter 1 goes on to do is talks about, in days 1 through 3, how God takes what is formless and gives it a form. And in days 4 through 6, he then takes those forms that he's created and he fills the void. So on day 1, he separates the light from the dark. He's giving some form there. In day 2, he separates the sea from the sky. And in day 3, he separates the dry land from the sea. So we have kind of the heavens separated from everything else. We have the sky separated from the earth, from the waters, and then we have the land separated from the sea. So now we have these realms that have been created, these spheres in which things can take place, but they're still empty. They're still void. And then as it's described, God goes on and he fills those voids in a corresponding way. So on day 4, on day 1, light and dark have been separated. On day 4, God fills that. He fills the heavens with the sun, the moon, and the stars. On day 2, the sea and the sky are separated. And then on day 5, God puts birds in the sky and fish in the sea. And on day 6, whereas on day 3, the land was separated from the sea, now God goes ahead and he puts animals and he puts humans on the dry land. So in God's act of creation, as he's working, what he's doing is he's taking this thing that was formless and void, he creates it first, and then he takes it and he gives it form and he fills the void. So this is sort of what we see about God's work. And the language that's oftentimes used to describe this is that God is, he's creating and he's cultivating. He's taking things that didn't exist and he's making them exist, and then he's taking those things that do exist and he's shaping them in some way. He's doing things with them. He's bringing order to what was chaos. He's filling, he's giving form and he's filling the void. He's creating and he's cultivating. So this is what we see about God's work. This is what God does in his work. What does that have to do with us? What does that have to do with our work? Well, again, in Genesis 2, we see the word work pop up for a second time. And what it says is that the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and keep it. So we see that as God worked, so man is meant to work. Humans are meant to work. That's what God does. He takes Adam, he puts him in the garden, and he says, work it and keep it. And just like Genesis 1 kind of taught us something about how God did his work, it also teaches us something about how humans are to do their work. So if we look at Genesis 1, 26-28, it says, then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. So as he's creating man, he's created everything else. He's created the plants and the animals and everything. And now his very last act of creation is to create man. It says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So first he says, we're going to make man in our image. Then he says, we're going to give him dominion over the created world. Then again in verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So the singular references to him, it's just saying mankind. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created mankind. Male and female, he created mankind. So again, in his image. And then verse 28 repeats that same thing that we saw in verse 26. The Lord blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So, what we see here is that mankind, who is the only creature made in the image of God, to be made in the image of God means to be God-like in some way. At the very least, it means to be like God in some ways. And the first thing we're told about what it means to be made in the image of God, the way in which we are supposed to be like God, is that we're supposed to work. We're supposed to have dominion over the land. We're supposed to fill the earth. We're supposed to subdue it. So an essential part of being human, an essential part of being made in the image of God, is working. We were created with work in mind. This verse, verse 28, is oftentimes called the cultural mandate. This is sort of God's mandate to humans to go off and to create culture. And they do that by filling the earth and subduing it. So procreation is a part of that, making other humans that fill the earth. But that's not the only way that you fill the earth. You also fill the earth by doing the same things that God does in his work, creating and cultivating. We don't create out of nothing, but as human beings, we are creative. We have the ability to create, to generate ideas that nobody has ever thought of, or products that nobody has ever thought of. So we fill the earth in part through procreation, but also in part through taking the things of the earth and cultivating them in such a way, doing things with them so as to build things like actual buildings that turn into actual cities, like all of the technology that we have today, that so many of us are in this area because we're working for tech companies. All of technology is taking things that are in the world, being creative with them, thinking creatively about them, and arranging them in ways, cultivating them in ways, so that they do certain things that couldn't be done before. And so as we think about serving God in our work or approaching our work Christianly, ultimately we're doing one of two things in our work. We're creating or we're cultivating. We're generating ideas or new systems, new ways of doing things, new products. We're creating things, maybe art, maybe music. We're generating, we're creating, or we're cultivating. We're taking that which God has created, or we're taking an idea or a product that somebody else has created, and then we are doing things with them. And the amazing thing about the storyline of the Bible is if we look here in Genesis, we're in a garden. And in a garden, there's plants. There's no buildings. It just starts off. There's plants and there's animals. If we jump from Genesis 1 and 2 to Revelation 21 and 22, what we find is a city that comes down from heaven onto earth. The new Jerusalem. A new heavens and a new earth. God sort of recreating the earth and the heavens in some way. And what we find there is not a garden. It's not just a new garden that is depicted there, but it's a city. It's this city that comes down from heaven. And the idea is that man has taken what God has given him in creation, and he's done his work of creating and cultivating in such a way that by the end of time, we are no longer in a garden, but we are in a city that humans have taken and have created, have worked at, have cultivated in such a way that there are buildings and there is technology and there are things like that. So that's what we see in Genesis 1 and 2 about what it means to work, how we're created to work, like God in creating and cultivating. So the question then is, what in the world does that have to do with our jobs? Because there are some of us who maybe could sort of really relate to this in what we do. If we were construction workers, it's very clear that we are building, we're creating, we're taking raw materials and we're doing things to them so as to construct something, and we're advancing society in that way. We're helping people that way. Maybe we're building houses, maybe we're building schools where kids will have an education, maybe we're building offices where businesses will be able to use for whatever ventures they're undertaking. Or, so let's say instead of construction workers, we were the teachers that are working in those buildings that have been built by the construction workers. How are we creating and cultivating in that way? Well, here we're caring for people. We have these students in our classroom, and we are thinking imaginatively, creatively about how to help them learn. And we are cultivating their minds. We are helping them grow as people. Or let's say we were medical doctors. Well, as a medical doctor, what would we be doing? We would be caring for people. We would be taking... as people come in and there's something wrong with them physically or mentally, we are trying to come up with ways to help them heal, to care for them, to help them to leave better than when they came. Or what if you were a software engineer? Not that any of you happen to be that, but what if you were a software engineer? Well, I personally am very thankful for the software engineers who worked to create and cultivate Google Maps to the place that it is, or Google Calendar to the place. Google Calendar helps me organize my life in ways that would not be possible without it. My life, if that was just taken away, my life would like just become chaos instantly, right? That it would become formless and void. But the Google engineers have created something that allows me to organize my life in such a way. And in doing that, they were participating in God's work. They were fulfilling God's calling on their life. Whether or not they knew it, they were contributing to society in such a way so as to bring order and to help somebody like me, who can now have like 20 different Google calendars that organize different sections of my life so I can keep track of everything that's going on. So there are lots and lots of different ways, and all of our jobs in some way, we can find elements of them that are about creating and cultivating, about advancing society in some way, about doing things that are beneficial for the common good, beneficial for humankind as a people. And that's what we're designed to do. So when we feel this sense of fulfillment in our work, The reason is because we have been created to work. Not that God needed some work done, so he created us, but when he created us, he had work in mind. He had jobs in mind. Work was there before the fall. Work is certainly here after the fall. But even in the end, after Christ comes back and we are with him for eternity, we will keep working. If you think actually that you're not going to be working in heaven, you're wrong. We will be working in heaven. We'll be in this city working, but the effects of the fall that we're going to look at next week, they're no longer going to be getting in the way of our work. So whenever we get sort of a glimpse here of what it's like to find fulfillment and satisfaction and pleasure in our work, that's what it's going to be like in heaven. But in the meantime, doctors will be out of jobs. Yeah. So don't go into medicine, but everything else. So work is an essential part of what it means to be human. Work is an essential part of what it means to be made in the image of God. And we are meant to find fulfillment in our work. We're not meant to be fulfilled by our work. It's not that our life is lacking something and then we work at something and now we are filled up, now we're complete. But rather, we've been created for a purpose. And it's through our work that we get to accomplish that purpose. So as we think about our jobs, as we think about the things that we give our time to outside of what we're paid for, like volunteering in the college ministry, for example, or childcare, for example, when we work at those things, we are reflecting the image of God, reflecting something of what it's like to be made in God's image, and we are accomplishing the purpose that he's given us. And we do that by finding the passions that he's given us, the talents that he's given us, the gifts that he's given us, paying attention to the opportunities that he's given us, what doors has he opened up, and then applying those things in that area to the end result of helping somebody with something. And that is really what our work is about. So like I said, next week we're going to look at what does it look like to work in a fallen world? Because as much as I would like to say I'm always fulfilled by my work, I'm not always fulfilled by my work. And I know that you guys are not always fulfilled by your work. Sometimes it's frustrating. Oftentimes it's very hard. Sometimes you run into dead ends and you just want to give up, or you need to restart, or you need to try something else. And that all is a result of living in a fallen world. So we're going to look at that next week. After that, we're going to look at our motivations for work. And we are going to talk a little bit about how we balance work with things like rest and play and entertainment coming a few weeks after that. That's kind of where we're heading. We're going to be in Genesis 3 next time, as well as other parts of the Bible, and then we'll be moving on from there. So I've got a few small group questions to help us process some of these things together. But before we do that, let me pray for us. Lord, I thank you that you have, in fact, created us to work, that you have made us bearers of your image, people who are meant to reflect something of your character, of your nature, and that part of that is that we have work to do. We have jobs to do. We have ministry to do. We are to be creating and cultivating things so as to help people flourish. And we want to do that, Lord. So I pray that as we discuss some of these things, that you would open our eyes in new ways to what it means to really approach our work as your disciples and as people who love you and have been changed by you. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.